Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Happy Thursday to us all. And Dominic, I've been joined by an esteemed guest here in the Broadcast Bunker 2.0. He is a friend of ours. He is a pollster extraordinaire. He is Charles Franklin from the Marquette University Law School poll. Charles, welcome back, man. Been far too long.
Hey, yeah, Charles.
Thanks. It's great to be back. Good to see you both, and good to talk a little polling and what's coming up, too.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming around.
Charles, Supreme Court polling. You did some national polling, and we appreciate you joining the national show. You pointed out to me, you've got some Wisconsin polling coming out next week, and we're going to invite you back in the happy hour. But this week, let's talk about the Supreme Court polling. And the question I'm dying to ask you, why do conservatives hate this new court? It's 6-3 conservative. Why do they hate the court?
Well, hate may be a slightly too strong a term, but they're certainly not as thrilled with it as you might have expected them to be after all of the talk in the last 4 years about it's all about the judges. What we saw is approval of the court overall is 60%, but that's down from 66% a year ago. And the drop is almost entirely among Republicans, who were 80% approval a year ago and are down to 59 now, while Democrats and Republicans are in the high 50s. Democrats and independents are in the high 50s and are unchanged from last time.
You know, I would say that's oxymoronic, but guys like conservative columnist Dave Blaska would say, I don't know what you mean. The fact that Republicans would be the polled part that loses confidence in the court, it's almost as if the Trump expectation that the Supreme Court would deliver the election, you know, even though he lost to him, it's like they didn't deliver, and therefore the people are angry. Can you know why they don't like the court as much?
Yeah, not entirely. I think one question that I have and that we'll ask when we do the next Supreme Court poll is, how do people perceive the court's involvement in the election? Very little of those election cases reached the U.S. Supreme Court, but the court certainly wasn't anxious to take them. So it is possible that Trump supporters are disappointed in that. We didn't ask about views of the election in this particular poll, so I can't answer that question. What we do know is that Republicans did not see the court as moving in a more moderate direction over the last year. A year ago, when Justice Ginsburg was still on the court, was when we did that poll in September of 2020. And since then, we got Amy Coney Barrett, appointed by Donald Trump, confirmed by a Republican Senate. You would think that would give Republicans more confidence in the conservative bent of the court. But in fact, we don't see them changing their views of the liberal conservative position of the court at all. But we do see this drop in approval.
And the perhaps as surprising, the confidence, the similar levels of confidence shown in the court by the liberals, by the independents, the fact that RBG is gone and they still trust this court that some would say has been stacked with Trump nominees.
I think that's the other telling part, is that with the addition of Coney Barrett, we don't see Democrats becoming less approving of the court. Democrats do see the court as having moved in a more conservative direction than Republicans see it moving. So it's not that Democrats are not reacting to that.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That is Charles Franklin. He's the director of the Marquette University Law School poll. He's a friend of ours back in. Appreciate you coming around, Charles. Spend some time. On this specific national polling on the U.S. Supreme Court, you're inquired as to the knowledge of the partisan majorities. Number one, why did you ask that question? What was the result? And I guess thirdly, what does that infer?
Yeah. There's been a huge increase over the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years in thinking of the court as being made up of Republican appointees to the court and Democratic appointees to the court. For a long time, we've talked about more liberal or more conservative justices, but in recent years, that's often explicitly referred to as which party holds a majority on the court. Now, the Chief Justice has pushed back strongly against that, saying justices don't wear red robes or blue robes. But I think in the broader public and certainly in political circles, it's often looked that way. So we asked which party has appointed a majority of justices to the court. And overall, about 30% of the public say they're not sure. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. 30% say they're certain that it's a Republican majority, 45% probably a Republican majority, and 24% say they think it's probably or definitely a Democratic majority. So, again, after all the emphasis on appointments to the court, it's surprising that not everybody knows that. But the big difference is on Republicans, where just 16% say it's definitely a Republican majority, and 30% of Republicans say it's maybe a Democratic majority. Among Democrats, it's very different. 44% know it's a Republican majority.
Now, when the blocking of Merrick Garland to the court happened, as I perceive it, was no hearing on the Senate side. Obviously, they said, well, too close to the election. It's only 9 or 10 months away. Got to let the American people decide. And their logic was is that the Senate was in play. And, of course, their logic was we just don't want to give Barack Obama another member of the court. But that would have turned the court. That very, even though Garland probably more of a moderate than a true liberal, it would have turned the court from a quote-unquote conservative to a liberal court. And they blocked it, and then, of course, they ran on it. Guys like Ron Johnson got a lot of mileage on running on the concept. We, the people, you, the voters, help me choose the next U.S. Supreme Court nominee. How effective do you think that message was, you know, let's say getting Ron Johnson elected in 2016?
I think there are two things that are going on. One is in both 2019 and 20, we asked about the blocking of the Merrick Garland appointment, and there was a substantial majority that thought that was the wrong thing to do. But the idea that the appointments are important, I think, does get through as just sort of a talking point. In a way, it's demonizing the court. These are a bunch of activist judges who are making up laws, and that's why you have to have appointments by our side of the party side. But it doesn't carry along with it deep knowledge of who does have the majority and that there's been a Republican majority for a long time. That point where Justice Scalia died was the first chance to change it to a 5-liberal, 4-conservative majority, and the Garland nomination blockage prevented that.
Charles, so then, you know, basically general approval of the U.S. Supreme Court, and I would question what happens with Roe v. Wade perhaps next year. That'd be very interesting to see how that pans out. But the institutional change, the expansion, or as I would put it, the balancing of the court, Charles, a lot of folks in the progressive circles are down for that. What did you find out in your national polling?
Yeah, in our national polling, this time we asked about cases that have been decided in the last in the last session, June and early July, and that did not include an abortion case. But we have asked about overturning Roe in both 2019 and 20, and there's a pretty substantial majority opposed to overturning it. Coming up this coming year, the court has taken a case that gives them an opportunity to overturn it if they want to, or to allow much more significant restrictions on abortion, or to overturn that law and those restrictions. So we'll be asking about that.
Charles, in the prior polling, how opposed was the electorate to the overturning of Roe v. Wade?
It's pretty substantial. It's in the 60s to 30s range of the balance of opinion. And that's just a straight question of, would you like to see Roe versus Wade, the opinion that said there was a right, constitutional right to an abortion in all the states, overturned or not?
And Charles, is it my understanding you also tried to poll the American public on some of the cases, or at least broadly on some of the concepts that are coming before the court. Were they even aware? Do you think that some of these cases were before the court? And I know the answer, probably not overly aware. I'm not even clear all the cases before the court. But I knew things like California donor secrecy was coming before the court. What did your polling show,
yeah,
sir?
There's not surprisingly a lot of lack of awareness of these things. It was about 35 to 38% that were aware of a California case that said California could not require large donors to be disclosed by charities in the state. It went up to 60% who were aware of the Affordable Care Act decision that upheld the Affordable Care Act. 58% knew about the angry cheerleader who sent unpleasant Snapchats out. And so there's a range of knowledge. Now, that's hardly surprising. You know, I sure couldn't tell you any details about most bills that are pending before Congress. And if they weren't paying me to pay attention to the court, I don't think I would know as many decisions as they've rendered this time. But I think what we get is that political actors, whether Democratic or Republican, see an advantage in emphasizing the issues and maybe the threats to their positions of decisions. So in Arizona, we saw an important voting rights case in which the court went on the conservative side, allowing the restrictions in Arizona to stand. Republicans often have said in the last few weeks they didn't go far enough with that, while Democrats see it as a huge threat to democracy and voting rights. And so I think both sides see these cases as something they can build up as an important issue with their followers. But the important point is that doesn't carry over to everybody in the public. An awful lot of the public, in the case of this decision, about 42% were aware of that decision. So almost 60% hadn't heard of it.
Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School polling. Lots of pressure, if you read some of the headlines, on Justice Breyer, 82 years old, perhaps should retire now and let the President Biden bring his own justice in. You polled about this topic. What did you find out, Charles?
Yeah, we asked this question two different ways, half sample on each. One, without any introduction, we just asked, do you think justices should consider the party in control of the White House and Senate when they decide when to retire? So no clues as to what we're talking about here. 28% said they should consider the party. 72% said they should not. But the argument and op-ed pieces about Justice Breyer, we tried to capture in our other question. Justice Breyer is 82 years old. He's the oldest member of the court. He was appointed in 94 by Clinton. Some Democrats say he should retire now while there's Democratic control. Do you think justices should consider? Now, then 39% said you should consider, but still 60% said not. With Democrats, that went up to 58% saying you should consider party now. Without that information, Democrats were at 41%. Saying you should consider it. Wow. So that information was important, but it's also obvious that what may be apparent in op-eds or on podcasts on the court just don't sink in to the broader public when they think about the court.
Now, Charles Franklin, you've been coming around for years, and we appreciate you doing so, and we hope you stick it around for one more segment.
Sure, absolutely. I can't leave. You may not get me out.
This is when the grilling starts.
Oh, maybe I'm going now.
You already committed, sir. I've often accused you of oversampling Republicans, and I want to ask you about the polling industry. Can we trust the polls? I want to dig in a little bit while we got time with the fine pollster, a pollster extraordinaire. He is Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School poll. We've been turning to him for at least five years or more. More than five, I suspect. We're being generous to all of our ages by saying it's been at least 5 years. Come back with us. Hopefully the friendship continues for at least 10 more minutes with Charles Franklin, our fine guest here in Madison.
Courts agree with us too. What's going on in this country?
No, they didn't.
But you can imagine what it'd be like if they did, right? Huh?
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine show, you can go online to devilradio927.com. You can listen to and download podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, I've got a fine guest here with me in Madison, a friend of this show. He is Charles Franklin, Marquette University pollster extraordinaire, except sometimes he oversamples Republicans, or at least that's been an opinion I expressed more than once because, you know, I am in something of a liberal silo over here. But when all things shook out, maybe you were oversampling progressives. Charles, how did the polling work out at the end, 2020? How'd you do, sir?
Yeah, only in this studio can I guarantee that people think I've oversampled Republicans every time. Seriously, the big errors in 2016 that we saw in national poll or statewide polling in several states included, unfortunately, me when I was badly off with Clinton winning by 7. And of course, Trump won the state by just about 1. So that was a big error for us, the biggest we've ever had. In 2020, we did better. We were off by 3 points on the high turnout model, and we were off by 4 on a normal turnout model. As it turned out, we did have an unusually high turnout. But both of these go to the question of whether Donald Trump is doing one thing, which is mobilizing a set of voters that are devoted to him, but not to Republican politicians more generally, and are somewhat less likely to turn out in midterm elections or in elections where Donald Trump isn't on the ballot. Certainly in 2020, we saw huge mobilizations of both Democrats who had extraordinarily high turnout and of Republicans with a very high turnout. And as I said, in our data, we did a bit better on the high turnout model, which may have captured some of those Republicans that did in fact vote for Trump, but don't show up as likely voters usually.
Charles, was it Trump that initially turned him out, or was it Scott Walker in the recall in 2012? Talking about sort of outstate rural voters in the state of Wisconsin, low propensity voters historically, and we had this off-year recall election in 2012, and suddenly this new constituency came out of the literal woodwork of northern Wisconsin.
I think there is something to that, and it's worth appreciating that there have been changes taking place in Wisconsin since at least 2010 or so. Excuse me. What we see in our data since 2010 or early 2012 is that white men without a college degree in 2012, January, just before that recall election, were 4 points more Republican than Democrat. Today, they're 24 points more Republican than Democrat.
Wow.
But that change began during the Walker administration before Donald Trump. The Trump time may have accelerated it a little bit, but it didn't create it out of thin air. That change was already taking place here. And, of course, coupled to that is the decline of unions in the state, both public sector and private sector. And those unions are a mechanism for giving working class white men a political reason to remain loyal to Democrats. And so that shrunk as Walker and then Trump made explicit appeals to that white working class vote.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette University Law School poll, he's sticking around for this segment. Charles, so do you then wait for, for the non-college educated voters? Is that something how you adjust for that going forward? And are the pollsters doing it to a great enough degree?
We have always, since the beginning of the Marquette poll in 2012, we've always waited to education. So that's not a new thing for us. But It turned out in 2016, a fair number of pollsters around the country were not using education in their weighting system, and they now mostly are. Unfortunately for me, that means that that potential error is not one that I could fix because I'd already fixed it. That's why I think the problem is getting Trump voters on the phone. That's one thing. And secondly, correctly identifying them as likely to turn out for him, even if they aren't. Don't look like likely voters on other kinds of typical criteria.
And do they lie? Are they lying to you?
We had a producer back in the day, Charles, Grumpy Dave, we called him, and he told us anytime he would take a call, he would specifically on purpose lie to them to, you know, whatever, mess it all up. Do you find that? I mean, how do you know that if people are doing that?
Yeah, give me his number so I can put him on my blacklist. I really honestly don't think we see much of that. We asked people 40 questions over the course of the interview. It is a whole lot of work to lie consistently across 40 different questions. And so it usually comes across pretty clearly if someone is not being straightforward with the interviewer. I think the bigger problem is not picking up the phone. We all know that it's hard to get somebody on the phone if they don't know your number. That's a big problem for pollsters universally. And so we have to call a lot to get somebody on the third, fourth, even fifth attempt to reach them. And if there's a relationship between being willing or unwilling to do the poll and who you support, that's a problem for pollsters. The weird thing was that after our huge error in 2016, in 2018, we had the governor's race within 1.1 percentage points and the Senate race between a tenth of a percentage point. And while we've made some adjustments at the margins, none of them are radical changes in the way the polling's done. So that just shows that in 2018, the polling clearly was not broken. Then in 2020, we had this smaller error, but it was still a bigger error than we usually make, that 3-point or so error. And what's the difference between 2018 and 16 and 20? It's Donald Trump being
Trump
on the ballot.
On the ballot, yeah.
So 22 will be the test of this. He won't be on the ballot, and we'll see whether we have similar problems or whether it looks more like 2018.
So, Charles, you got some new Wisconsin polling coming out next week. Who's going to win the gubernatorial race? I mean, there's not even any Republican candidates yet. We know there's lots of Democratic candidates that want to go against Ron Johnson, but we don't know if Ron's even running for reelection. So how do you work out that soup?
Well, the way you described it perfectly fits. We don't know who the candidates are yet. There's a giant field on one side and not very well known at this point. So we're just not going to ask horse race questions in the short term. We're going to wait for the race to shape up some, probably into next year. But what we will do is look at people's approval and favorability of both Senator Johnson and Governor Evers to see how they're standing with the public 15 months out from that election.
So as you speak, Charles, what I'm hearing is I have every intention of oversampling Republicans again.
Just for you. Just for
back
you.
To the old rut. Charles Franklin, he's a pollster extraordinaire. Charles, thank you so much for making the trip down to the studios here in Madison. Thank you so much. I'll be calling you. Hopefully you'll come back next week with some Wisconsin polling.
Thank you, Charles.
I look forward to it despite that last segment.
More Devil's Advocates. I think the audience will look forward to it because of that last segment. More Devil's Advocates.
Do you concur?
I don't like to get into taking sides.
Why not concur?
On the internet, you can find all sorts of people saying different